Please sit down. Please sit down. I'm Arne Duncan, the Secretary of Education. I'm going to be very, very brief. I'm just the warm-up act here. And I just want to thank a few people. And you'll hear from later, but what the Vice President's done, what his wife does every single day to support community colleges is just extraordinary. And I don't know if there's been another administration that's put a spotlight on the impact that community colleges are having, like this man and his wife. So please give him a round of applause. And these grants, I feel a little bit weird talking about because it's not my money. It's Tom's money. So I'm Tom's really Santa Claus here. It's your money. I'm happy to spend it, though. But what I will say, and he'll go into it more, is these resources, and it's $2 billion, very significant over the past couple of years. This is not some kind of gift. This is an investment. This is an investment in school leaders, in businesses, in people who are trying to do things in a very, very different way. And I've been to dozens and dozens of community colleges, and they are some of the most inspiring visits that I have anywhere I go. You see 18-year-olds, you see 38-year-olds, you see 58-year-olds. You see people from all walks of life. It's like a mini United Nations, and everyone is trying to take that next step up the economic ladder. And green energy jobs, IT jobs, advanced manufacturing jobs, healthcare jobs, where community colleges are doing extraordinary work, they are literally becoming economic engines in their community. Businesses are coming to those communities because of the real training that community colleges is providing to help real people get real jobs. So this is an investment in all of your leadership, in creativity, in hard work. This is the right thing to do for me. It's the ultimate triumph in common sense. And I'm so proud of what you guys are doing to help strengthen families, strengthen communities, and ultimately strengthen the nation. It's my honor to introduce the guy who's doing the real hard work here, and that's my good friend, Secretary Perez. He has reinvigorated the Department of Labor. He is driving this work every single day. It's not some kind of just like intellectual issue for him. This is a real passion. It comes from his heart. He knows what our country needs. He knows how to be a good partner. He knows the real work doesn't happen here in Washington. It's empowering all of you in real communities to give people a chance to be successful. Please give a warm round of applause to my good friend, Tom Perez.
Good afternoon. I had a little bit of throat surgery a couple weeks ago, so if I sound a little like, Vito Corleone, I want to apologize in advance, but I do want to assure all of you that my support today for community colleges and for this TAC program is absolutely full-throated, notwithstanding the absence of a full throat. It is. I want to underscore my thanks to my friend and colleague, Arne Duncan. You know, education is lifelong. It's cradle to grave. My mother started college the same year I started college because she didn't have an opportunity to go when she was a kid. And so I learned, you know, from a personal level that education indeed is lifelong. And I have learned so much from working with the Vice President and his wife on these issues, because this is really a conversation about the middle class. What does it mean to be the middle class in America in the year 2014, in the year 2024, all of that? That's really what we're doing. And my favorite trips, some of my favorite trips have been not only with the Vice President, but with Dr. Biden. And you go to these community colleges, and all of a sudden, the light bulb goes off when people in the audience realize that she's not only the Second Lady of the United States, but she has a full-time other job teaching at a community college. And they raise their hand, are you teaching now? You're on a leave of absence, right? No, I'm teaching tomorrow, and I'll be grading papers on the plane ride home. That's what she tells them. And that's why it's just been such a pleasure, because the Vice President and the President understand that this is about strengthening and growing the middle class. When I was a kid in Buffalo, a 10th grade education, a high school education, you could punch your ticket to the middle class at Bethlehem Steel, Republic Steel, the Ford Stamping Plant, Harrison Radiator, or any other number of places. But, today's a different world, and we've got to understand that. And that is what this program is about. And the 60% of the 2020 workforce was already in the workforce in 2010. And so what that means is that the joint venture that the Department of Education and the Department of Labor have is indeed a joint venture, because for so many people, the K-12 system is already in the rearview mirror, and the challenge for us is to make sure that the jobs of the 21st century are accessible to all of them. And here's the good news. Everywhere we go, when we travel, remember traveling to New Hampshire with you, Mr. Vice President, you hear the bullishness and optimism in the voices of employers. You see it in the data with the 54 consecutive months of private sector job growth, over 10 million jobs. We haven't seen that amount of growth since the late 90s. And the investments led by Secretary Duncan over at the Department of Education and led by the President and the Vice President are really paying off. And what I hear from employers is that I want to grow my business. I'm bullish about the future. And what I make sure I need is we need that steady pipeline of skilled workers. And that's what the TAC program has been about. This is round four. And what we are in the middle of, my friends, is an unmistakable revolution and transformation of how we are educating our people to compete for the jobs of the 21st century and punch their ticket to the middle class. I know a lot of folks in this audience. I've been to Warwick Community College on the Eastern Shore of Maryland. I see how absolutely deft these community college leaders are in understanding demand needs. Today's paradigm is not yesterday's paradigm. Yesterday's paradigm was train and pray. You know, we have training programs and we pray that there are jobs out there. Today, we are totally demand-driven, job-driven, understanding the opportunities in cybersecurity, in health, in manufacturing, in all of these remarkable demand areas, and then through the role of partnership and through the secret sauce of community colleges, helping people to punch their ticket to the middle class, helping employers to grow their business, helping the nation and our communities to move forward. So what this really is, this is kind of like, you know, Dwight Eisenhower built the highway infrastructure in the 50s, and we're building the new infrastructure of adult training and education in the 21st century, and the TAC program, and the bipartisan partnerships we've had in Congress. Not a lot of times when the president comes into a room to sign a bill and there's overwhelmingly bipartisan support, because we understand that if we are to compete in the 21st century, we've got to construct a 21st century education infrastructure. And community colleges, they get it. You are always at the forefront of innovation and partnership. And these grants, I'm so grateful. So many of my colleagues at the Department of Labor and at the Department of Education, it is not easy to review these grants. And the reason it's not easy is because the grant applications keep getting better and better, because you're learning more and more. And for every grant recipient, there are so many other worthy applicants for whom we ran out of money. And that's good news. And so we're going to be working with everyone. Community colleges are indeed these incubators of innovation and opportunity, and this TAC program is doing just that. And the Vice President shortly is going to talk about some of this year's grantees, because they are working in a whole array of areas, all of which are in-demand areas. Areas, and what that means is people are going to have access to skills that will enable them to get a job tomorrow and punch their ticket to the middle class. And just in case you wonder whether I mean that, let me introduce the two people who are going to introduce the Vice President. Gary, and I, this is not the first time I've met these folks. And I, as a proud Marylander, these are two people, the pride of Anne Arundel County, Maryland, who are wonderful people. Gary Pollard, Jr., served 8 years as a combat medic in the U.S. Army. Earlier this year, he got an associate's degree in business administration, earning, among other things, a cybersecurity certificate. By the way, in Maryland, we can't find enough folks with this expertise. You get that today, you'll be employed tomorrow. And thanks to this program, he'll be making $60,000 a year as a junior network engineer supporting the computer infrastructure for the U.S. Naval Academy. $60,000 a year. And by the way, Mr. Vice President, he starts Wednesday. And by the way, they liked him so much, he said, this is a true story, I got another friend who's just as good. They hired his friend. He's starting Wednesday, too. So, you know, he's already... Do they give you, like you find a friend, you get like, you know, a free meal at P.F. Chang's or something? You know, you ought to do that. You know, and so there's a big step up from, you know, his part-time job at the college as a lab tech and a tutor. And so he is really rocking and rolling, and I'm so excited. And I'm equally excited to introduce Ginny Quillen, because Ginny Quillen's life story is the testament of the importance of second chances, of resilience and resolve. She grew up in some challenging circumstances, and you know, she never gave up. You know, she had a childhood that had its shares of ups and downs, abuse, involvement in things that were not healthy, involvement in the criminal justice system, including arrests and things of that nature. She was a single mom working as a payroll and human resources manager when her position was eliminated during the height of the Great Recession. But this woman never gives up. She never stopped believing in herself. And what she did was she went to Anne Arundel Community College, which was one of the early TAC recipients, and she finished in May with an information assurance and security certificate. And she started a couple months ago, and she's earning $52,000 a year as a network operations incident manager at Rockwell Collins, one of the anchor employers of Maryland. And I think Scott, her boss, is here, isn't he? Where is he? He's here somewhere. There he is. Again, And let me tell you one more thing before I turn to them. At the end of her progress, and this is when we talk about job-driven training, Mr. Vice President, the college not only provided them with the critical training so that you could get the core competencies that you need, but the college also helps them find a job. And so they set up what they call speed interviews. So there were, I think, 10 employers who came in one day, and she had an interview. I guess it's kind of like speed dating. And this was very successful. She got her job offer 1 hour after her interview. And that is what the definition of job-driven training is about, because it's a means to an end. It's about allowing people to punch their ticket to the middle class. And so with that, it gives me great pride to bring up our two wonderful people, Gary and Ginny, so that they can introduce the Vice President of the United States.
I'm Ginny Quillen, and prior to being selected for the TAC grant program, I was newly unemployed. I was a single parent with responsibilities and bills that I couldn't meet, a home that was moving towards foreclosure, and no immediate prospects for employment. I previously earned a bachelor's degree in business, but in an oversaturated job market with so many people vying for employment, I felt disadvantaged at the hiring table due to unique challenges from my past. I realized that I needed different career skills to move forward. So committing to the National STEM Consortium's Information Assurance and Cybersecurity Program gave me the skills to build a career. And I love this career. I enjoy working in and am committed to increasing my knowledge in my area of focus. I wouldn't have considered pursuing education while unemployed if not for the grant. I hope the funding continues. I do. I hope it continues to be available for others, because I know the change that it made in my life. And I believe funding sources like the TAC grant help make our community and country stronger by addressing areas of need in our labor markets and educating people with those specific skills and putting them back to work. All of us benefit from that. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Gary Paula Jr., U.S. Army veteran, and I graduated from the National STEM Consortium Cybersecurity Program at Anne Arundel Community College. Prior to enrolling in the cyber technology program, I worked in the telecommunications industry for 14 years. In August 2012, I found myself unemployed due to a layoff. As a husband and a father, I needed to make a decision about my future, so I enrolled at Anne Arundel Community College as a full-time student and enrolled in the cyber technology program. I have had the opportunity to reinvent myself as a result of this program. I have a new set of skills that has positioned me to be on the forefront of cyber technology. In a matter of 2 years, I went from having a limited set of skills to unemployed to now becoming a part of an educated workforce with a set of skills that is in high demand. Now I am employed with a woman with an IT company that has given me an opportunity to not only provide for my family and has given me a sense of pride. None of these transformational changes would have been possible without my faith and the support of wife and family in the cyber technology program. Thank you.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we would like to introduce
the Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden.
Joe Biden.
Great job, man. Great job. Great job, man. Thank you all very much. Please be seated. Thank you. Thank you very much. As you can tell, our team's not at all enthusiastic about community colleges. I want to start off by recognizing a really good friend of mine and one of our champions in Congress who said he was supposed to sit out there in the audience, but I want you to all see him. Congressman Moran from Virginia is the kind of guy who does everything with passion, and quite frankly, he's one of the reasons why all of what we're attempting to do and suggesting within the administration, both on education and labor force issues, it's getting done. And I just wanted him to be up here. And the congressman pointed out I should talk about the Vets Reentry Program, but I'm afraid, which is really important, but I'm afraid your physical constitutions may recede before your intellectual interest peak. So I'm gonna leave that for the moment. Gary and Ginny, thank you very much. You're what this is all about. But quite frankly, I think you represent the average American. The average American who I often hear other people saying, folks don't want to work. I tell you what, it's never, never, never been a good bet to bet against the American people. I've not seen anywhere I've gone, and Arnie and I and the Secretary and I have gone all over the country, and we've done multiple events together. And everywhere I go, from my old neighborhood in Claymont, Delaware, all the way to Texas, state of Washington, even in Cape Cod. Would you smile a little bit, Mr. President? I think we mustn't have given the president of Cape Cod Community College enough money because he hadn't smiled once today. He is so serious. Maybe that's just that Brahmin thing. I don't know what it is. You know what I mean? You got to smile a little bit, man. I'm with you. All kidding aside, look. The one thing I want to disabuse, and you are disabuse some of our colleagues of, the American people are not afraid to work. They just want a fair shot. And if you, and you have, because I'm preaching to the converted here, you see women and men coming back to school, taking a chance. And the chance they're taking is their pride. They've been out of school 5, 10, 15 years. They want to provide for their families, and they're going back into an educational circumstance, an institution that maybe they didn't do very well in 5, 10, 20 years ago. It takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of intestinal fortitude to put yourself in the line like that in front of your children, your spouses, your neighbors. And I think we vastly underestimate that. I think we vastly, vastly underestimate that. And, you know, the resolve of the folks, American people out there, is one that is backed up by just a whole lot of courage and a whole lot of commitment. And, Jenny, you're an inspiration. It takes a lot of courage to do what you've done, raising a family. First of all, getting your bachelor's degree, then saddling up again and going back again. And my wife, who does teach full-time, she teaches 15 credits at the Northern Virginia Community College, and I got sworn in on January 20th. January 22nd, she was in the classroom, having come from Delaware Technical Community College before that. when people ask her, and it's a lot like a lot of you, when you ask, is teaching her profession? She says, no, teaching is not what I do. It's who I am. And an awful lot of you, particularly the community colleges, fully understand that, because you see it, you feel it, you taste it, you smell it, you see what happens in the lives of individuals that come before you. And and as you could tell, Secretary Perez is this is in his DNA, man. And in the same way with Arnie, you've seen two of the finest, and I mean this, I'm not being silly, you don't hear me say this all the time, two of the finest cabinet level officials that I've ever worked with, and I've worked with eight presidents. These gentlemen are not only smart as hell, in spite of the fact he went to Brown and he went to Harvard. That's, they didn't go to a great state schools like I did. But the thing about it is, and you can tell when you see them in your schools, their passion for this. They believe. But most of all, they believe in the American people. They believe people are ready to stand up. And that's why we're going to succeed, because the American people. You know, it's a big day, and I want to put this in perspective a little bit, and it already has been in part. You know, we got clobbered. The economy was absolutely clobbered with the Great Recession 2008. And in a macroeconomic sense, we're back. 10 million private sector jobs, 54 straight months, the longest streak in American history. Federal deficit as a share of the economy reduced by 50%, fastest since World War II. But the untold secret out there is the middle class is not back. Middle class is not back. You look at all these data, I think it's $87.7 trillion, the total net worth of the economy, larger than ever, and everything. But the middle class is not back. According to a recent study, in the last 10 years, actually from 2000 to 2012, everything else cumulatively grew, even through the recession, even in spite of the recession. 25% growth in GDP, productivity up over 30% in the same period. Middle class people, average wage increase, 14 cents. 14 cents. So what they're feeling, they're not making up. They're not making up. Go back to your old neighborhoods. Where you grew up. Go back to your old neighborhoods. Look in the eyes of their kids. Or if you're a lot younger than I am, which all of you are, go back and look in the eyes of your colleagues, the kids you grew up with. They're uncertain. They're just not sure. And that's the reason right now we've got to get this right. We're going to deal the middle class back in, because — and I know I'm a broken record on this, but I think it's coming out. You've been hearing me say, those of you who paid attention, for the last 20 years, I don't know where it's written that America can no longer be in the manufacturing capital of the world. I don't know where that was written. I don't know where it's written that said we can't be the leading automobile manufacturer in the world and at the same time lead the service industry, the service sector as well. I didn't see where that was written ever. Look what's happening now. Look what's happening. America, not because we grew 4.6%, America is better positioned than any country in the world, any region of the world, to be the economic epicenter of growth for the 21st century, at least the first half of the 21st century. And there's a reason for that. The reason for that is that we are the epicenter of energy. By 2017, North America, from Mexico to Canada, will be energy independent. By 2022, America will be energy independent. Natural gas, which is the thing on which manufacturers and plants move, is 7 times cheaper on average than it is in the Pacific Basin, 3 times cheaper than it is in Europe. We remain the most adaptive venture capitalist system in the world. Our legal system actually adjudicates fairly claims and protects intellectual property. And as recent studies have shown, our workers are 3 times more productive as workers in China and other parts of the world. So America's coming back in a big way. You know, there's a couple — you don't have to take my word for it. There's an outfit some of you know of, A.T. Kearney, which is a management consultant firm that's one of the leaders in the world. Every year it goes and picks the 500 largest industrialists in the world and says, where's the best place in the world to invest? By a factor larger than any time in the history of that survey, America's number one, by a wider margin than any other part of the world. In the history of maintaining that survey, the single best place in the world to invest is America. It's not only best to invest in America when it's in terms of the standpoint of manufacturing, but IT, health, in every sector, it's viewed as the best. The Boston Consulting Group, not very far from y'all in Cape Cod, the Boston Consulting Group does a similar survey. They survey every American company that is headquartered, or excuse me, that has a facility in China. And they've asked repeatedly, I don't hold me to the number of years, I think it's 12, 15 years they've asked this question. What are your plans for next year? This past survey came out, I guess it was in March. 54% of American companies invested in China say they plan on coming home. In all the neighborhoods where your community colleges are, you don't hear about outsourcing anymore. What do you hear? It's insourcing. An entire generation heard about outsourcing. Padlocking factories, unbolting from the floor, the factory floor, the equipment, and going overseas. Folks are coming home. So here's the point. The number of jobs are growing, but the middle class hasn't been dealt back in. And this is the time to deal them back in, because there's going to be so much opportunity. And if we miss this opportunity, we'll continue to have this disproportionate allocation and the allocation of wealth in America that's unhealthy. And this is not Joe Biden saying this or some liberal think tank. It comes from Standard & Poor's. Income inequality is the reason why, and if it gets any worse, will slow economic growth at home and worldwide. The same thing from the International Monetary Fund, every major study. So, folks, we got to get this right, not only for the middle class, but for America. So the pie continues to actually grow, but everybody gets a piece of it. And there's two things we need to do, and you all know it. You feel it in your bones. The one thing is we have to significantly increase more in infrastructure. Out there, you have the Society of Civil Engineers pointing out we're about $3.5, I think it is, it could be $3.3 trillion needed between now and 2020 in new investment in infrastructure and repairs. That's all about productivity. If you can build your widget and get it to market quicker, you're going to go where you can build your widget and get it to market quicker. That means bridges, roads, canals, airports, ports. It's ridiculous what we're not doing. There used to be a consensus when you and I got to Congress. Republicans were more bullish on infrastructure than even we were. We got to get this consensus back. But there's a second thing we need to take advantage of this gigantic change that's going to take place over the next 10 years if we're going to maintain our position as number one in the world. And by the way, those of you who think I'm exaggerating, you know, I want China to succeed. I really do. I want the European Union to succeed. But their problems are staggering compared to ours. Recent article in today's Economist, this week's Economist. Chinese not only have a problem with energy, they have no water. Water, W-A-T-E-R. Multi-billion-dollar projects just to get water. You see what's happening in California. Think of that with a country of 1.4 billion people. Again, we want to help, for real. They're a great market for us. We want them to succeed and grow, as we do Europe. But folks, in order for us to be able to maintain our place in the world, we not only need investment infrastructure, we need the best trained, most advanced and skilled workforce in the world. I'm singing out of the Secretary's hymnal here. It really is true. Our national security depends upon our economic security, but also our national security depends on us having the single best trained workforce in the world. And it matters. That's where you all come in. That's where my wife comes in. That's where those of you in the community colleges come in. The President and I, from the very beginning, with the help of Arnie, knew community colleges were the hidden treasure. My wife says it's the best-kept secret in America. We're trying to make it no longer a secret, and you're helping a great deal. But Arnie and I, right from the very beginning, from the Recovery Act on, knew the community colleges, when we looked at you, you were a way to drive economic growth, increase employment, decent-paying jobs, job-driven training. And it really is what it's about. And you know why? You're the most adaptive institutions in the nation. Four-year institutions are good. They're great. We need them. Graduate schools are incredibly important. But you're the most adaptive. Most adaptive. In order to be able to do what we need to do to make higher education more affordable and accessible. So what we did was, you know, everybody says, well, why were we so hung up on making sure, with the help of Jim, keep that $2,500 a year tax credit? Well, that was the one thing that allowed every middle-class person, whether or not they qualified for a Pell Grant, to be able to pay to go to community college. 95% of you, it covers you. Big deal. Little thing, but a big deal. A lot of you come from families like mine. When there was a recession, someone around my dad's table, his brother, his sister, next-door neighbor, brother-in-law, somebody was going to lose a job. No one gets it, man, when you lose a job, unless you lost a job. No one understands. My dad used to say, a job's about a lot more than a paycheck, Joey. It's about your dignity. It's about your place in the community. It's about who you are. It's about how you perceive yourself. We know everybody's more than their job, but in our culture, it's a really, really big thing. So that's why we made these historic investments in Pell Grants as well, increasing the maximum amount by $1,000. We capped federal loan repayment, 10% of your income. And this summer, I released a report at the President's request outlining 50 actions the government could take and the private sector taking now to equip hardworking Americans with new skills to connect them to employers who are in need of skilled workers. You know, I used to have a great friend. He was a wonderful basketball player like Arnie. He played at a place a while ago when Providence College was had great teams. And he played with not only All-Americans, but two All-Pro players. Walker and Reardon played for the Knicks and others. His name is Pete McLaughlin. He died prematurely, and Pete was a smart guy, but academically not very interested. But Pete had a great expression that community college professors and presidents know better than anybody else, I think. He said, Joe, you got to know how to know. Think what I just said. You got to know how to know. I can walk you into the greatest library in the world, the Library of Congress, unless you know how to access the card catalog, the computer. You have no idea how to access all that information. You got to know how to know. And what you do better than anybody in getting people who are out of work, people who are coming out of high school, and everybody. My wife's average age in my wife's class is 30 years old. Two-thirds, because of Northern Virginia, are other nationalities who have their green card. So you got to know, where do you go to get the information that Gary and Ginny got? You got to know how to know. What we learned is that what's coming back requires different skills than existed before. 6 out of 10 jobs, Secretary Perez pointed out, by the end of this decade are going to require something beyond a high school degree, whether it's a 15-week certificate at community college, a 2-year associate's degree, 4-year bachelor's, or a PhD. Just consider the following. The study we did after 7 months showed that information technology, there is going to be a need in the next 10 years of 1.4 million jobs in the next 10 years. software developers making $60,000 a year typically needs a bachelor's degree, but computer network specialists, the average salary is $59,000. You don't need a college degree. You don't need a bachelor's, but a two-year degree. Healthcare, you need another 64,000 dental hygienists just in the near term. Salary, $70,000 a year, median salary. Can be trained at community college. Registered nurses. We're almost 600,000 registered nurses short in the near term. $65,000 to $75,000 a year. Advanced manufacturing. There's 100,000 jobs right now as I speak going unfilled because they lack the skilled workers. Some require a bachelor's degree, but most don't even require a two-year degree. An incredible number need a 15-week, 18-week, four-month certificate. There's incredible opportunities for workers and businesses. The companies, the educational system, at every level of government, we need to rethink how we're helping more folks move toward the opportunities that already exist and the ones that are coming. That's why today's a pretty big day. A key strategy in building partnerships between community colleges, employers, labor groups, and other local leaders who work together to, one, figure out what skills local employers are looking for, to begin to design new curricula to help students meet those skills. So back in April, the Community College of Allegheny County in Pennsylvania, the president and I announced that there were going to be these grants. There'll be four rounds of these grants. We've invested nearly $2 billion, thanks to the Congress and others. About 700 colleges that have partnered with businesses to train workers in demand-oriented jobs. In this fourth round, we're announcing today that we're investing almost $500 million in 71 community colleges and business partnerships. That may include other partners like unions and workforce boards. Jill and I saw this kind of successful partnership in Monroe Community College up in Rochester, and we were up there together, which partnered with the optics industry. The community college initiated going out because it used to be, you talked about Buffalo. It used to be in Rochester, there were a lot of really good middle-class jobs. I don't know how many people Kodak employed, but it was in the well over 10,000. It may have been close to 35. Don't hold me to the number, but a lot of people. Bausch and Lomb. Great jobs. These were not minimum wage jobs. These are wages you can raise a family on. And by the way, my definition of middle class, I have a lot of great economists, as we all do, working for us. They'll give you a number, 52,170 or 51. It's not a number. It's a value set. It's about being able to own your home and not rent it. Being able to send your kid to a park knowing they're going to be safe and come home safely. Be able to send them to a local school where if they do well, they can get to college. And if they get to college, you'll figure out a way how to get them there. In the meantime, maybe take care of one of your geriatric parents because the other passed away. And hope you're not going to have your children have to take care of you. That's middle class in America. And so what they did went out and they looked at what was left of the optics industry. And they found there are a whole lot of small companies out there in need of a lot of local work. So they ended up creating well over 500, and it's going to 1,000 now, jobs that are good-paying jobs. One of these outfits is, well, you know, on the Mars rover. I mean, the optics, they do this. Jill has visited 12 partnerships in 11 states for community colleges and partners in industry and healthcare, manufacturing, engineering. These partnerships provide a seamless transition so folks can move from a classroom directly into a job, as you've heard here today, that you can raise a family on. Think of the worker who feel like they're in a dead-end job and want to get a better one. These partnerships provide a pathway. Again, they show where you have to go, how you can get there, where you can get the money to help you get the education. The best of all those partnerships are those that are apprenticeships, where you can move up while you're still employed. Think of the workers who are just getting started and hungry to learn new skills, move up the ladder. These partnerships help them do that. It's transformative. It's good for workers. It's good for business. And it's good for the economy. And as I know, Jill and Secretary Perez and Secretary Duncan and I, we're excited about this and hit the road in the next few weeks to talk about these partnerships. Because this is one of those programs, as you explain to the American people, you can speak plainly, plain English, not as opposed to Spanish, but as opposed to complicated. You can plainly and directly explain to Democrats and Republicans out there in the country what this is about. And there's overwhelming support for it. Folks, helping America get more skills, the skills they need for these jobs, to put them back as becoming a central element of our economic growth, this division has guided the President and me and our allies in Congress since our first days in office. The whole mission is widening the aperture to the middle class. Because, folks, when the middle class does well, the wealthy do very well. And that's good. It's not bad. That's a good thing. And the poor have a way up. The single greatest commodity that is needed in time of economic distress for an individual family is hope. Is hope. You provide that hope. We guide them to your door. You do the job. But in order to thrive, their education and training has to be just as dynamic and just as adaptive as our economy is. As I said, Americans want to work. All they want is a fair chance. They don't want a guarantee, just a fair shot. These grants provide hardworking Americans just a fair shot. And given their fair shot, as I said at the outset, the American people have never, ever, ever let their country down. And there's a reason, because it's never been a good bet to bet against America. You all are betting on it. I'm guaranteeing you it's a good bet. And I want to thank you all for what you've been doing and what you're going to have an opportunity to do more of. Thank you all. God bless you all, and may God protect our troops. Thank you.